This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Futuro.
Dear listener, a content warning. The next few minutes are of a 911 call with a person in distress. At about 11:30 on a Monday morning in July of 2021, a woman in southern Arizona calls 911 from her cell phone.
Estoy hablando de emergencia.
¿Qué clase de emergencia? ¿Estás perdida?
She's in the Sonora Desert. She's all by herself. And she's lost.
¿Vienes sola o con otras personas?
No, yo sola.
The woman is put on hold. That's because she's a migrant crossing the border from Mexico to the United States. Then the dispatcher follows protocol and transfers her call from the local sheriff's office in Pima County, Arizona, to the U.S. Border Patrol.
Okay. So I have a Mexican phone number.
She's begging the dispatcher to send help. Eventually, she's found and picked up by Border Patrol. But calls like this happen all the time in southern Arizona. In some cases, like this, the lucky outcome, actually, is the caller being located, then detained by Border Patrol, and ultimately deported. But many other times, border crossers are never rescued by Border Patrol, and they succumb to the blistering heat in the Sonora Desert. As of November of 2021, Humane Borders, a local organization, has counted nearly 4,000 people whose remains have been recovered after dying trying to cross this vast stretch of land. Many more have died and have yet to be found. From PRX and Futuro Media, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Today, Death by Policy at the Arizona Border, a story by our new unit, Futuro Investigates, into how the United States' own policies are purposely leading to deaths. For over a year, Futuro Investigates has been digging into public information to understand this crisis in the Arizona desert.
Llegamos a la 1:30.
Wow. Sí. ¿Y ahora qué horas son ahorita?
Son las 4 y...
It's just past 4 a.m. on a warm Saturday morning in September of 2021. Latino USA producers Julieta Martinelli and Jess Alvarenga have just arrived at a tiny gas station in Ajo, Arizona, a small town just minutes from the U.S.-Mexico border. Over by one of the gas pumps, they meet a man named Angel. Angel is originally from Mexico. He's in his 40s. He has a warm, shy smile. And, well, he looks pretty tired.
Pues vamos a agarrar un café. ¿Café?
Angel is one of the leaders of the Blue Armadillo's search and rescue team. They're a group of volunteers from Southern California who drive out into the Arizona desert every month to search for people who may have lost their way crossing the border in this region. It's known by Border Patrol as the Tucson Sector. Today, Angel drove to Ajo with 8 other volunteers. They were all wearing matching royal blue long sleeve shirts.
Este es el muchacho que vamos a buscar y se llama Johnny Abel, es de Honduras.
The Blue Armadillos are heading out to search for a young man from Honduras who recently disappeared in the Sonoran Desert. His name is Johnny.
Nos dieron unas coordenadas que son estas. No, son estas, están aquí, aquí arriba. Y aquí es donde vamos a buscar, aquí es donde vamos.
Ángel says Johnny's family called the Blue Armadillos after getting a phone call letting them know that Johnny had been left behind in the desert. They believe the caller was the guide that Johnny was crossing with. All he said was that Johnny couldn't keep walking. He then gave them a coordinate and hung up. Ángel taps a point on the map. He says today's goal is to make it here. He warns our team it's going to be a pretty tough weekend. Even though it's September, the heat is set to hit 110 during the daytime. It'll be nearly 30 miles round trip on foot through the desert with little shade and only the water that they can carry on their backs. Today's mission is on the Devil's Highway. The Devil's Highway is a historic 250-mile road that passes through some of the most remote and inhospitable terrain of the Sonoran Desert. While most of the Arizona border with Mexico is separated by the border wall, this area is so expansive that the wall hasn't been built here. Because of the high heat and endlessness of this vast terrain, Border Patrol is also less likely to be patrolling deep in the desert. And that's why so many people attempt to cross here. It's also why so many die.
Many of them coming all the way from South America, Venezuela, Cuba, and Colombia, rushing to cross this open gap along the Yuma-Arizona border.
After walking 3,000 kilometers from Guatemala, a migrant's journey ended in Arizona's desert.
A man dies attempting to cross the southwest border as he tries seeking asylum in the U.S. near San Luis, Arizona.
And that's why the Blue Armadillos keep on coming back. The Blue Armadillos have over 30,000 followers on Facebook and nearly 70,000 subscribers on YouTube. People learn about their work through word of mouth and the videos that they record and post after they finish their searches.
La diferencia de Ajo, Arizona, esta es la diferencia de acá, que para nosotros que venimos a caminar nos parece muy bonito el paisaje. Pero la travesía para un hermano migrante es muy difícil.
The Blue Armadillos say the number of people who reach out asking for help to find their missing loved ones is often just overwhelming. There are sometimes dozens of requests every week, but there are less than a dozen volunteers with their group.
Y esto pues lo hacemos nosotros, lo hacemos de una forma como en poder como regresar un poquito de paz a esa familia que está desesperada buscando a su familiar.
Gonzalo is one of those volunteers. Gonzalo tells us that groups like theirs are often the last and sometimes the only resort for desperate families who say they've called Border Patrol, they've called the Mexican consulate, they've called the police, and they've gotten nowhere.
Si ya pues, si se encontró con vida, que bueno, gracias a Dios. Pero si se encontró muerto, por lo menos regresa a su país, le saben a dónde está.
The reality is conditions on this stretch of the border are so extreme that a person can die from heat exhaustion in just days or even hours. But Gonzalo says it's important to go out and do the search anyway, even if only to help get a missing person's remains home. Sometimes it takes weeks from the moment the Blue Armadillos get a call until they're able to travel from California to Arizona. They are entirely funded by donations. They have an active GoFundMe and routinely do events like selling tamales to gather up funds.
Si quieren seguir ayudándonos, pues pueden marcarme para que nos apoyen, ya sea con aguas.
There is no financial reward for volunteering to search for lost people in the desert. There is only the sun, the sand, and the risk. Like the Blue Armadillos, a handful of other rescue groups volunteer in this area. They exist out of necessity because so many people have died or disappeared here, and because so many continue to do so. Since the 90s, the Tucson sector has seen one of the highest rates of migrant deaths reported per year. Between 2002 to 2013, the Tucson sector reported more deaths per year than any other place in the country. Over the last few years, it's come in right under the Rio Grande Valley and Laredo in Texas. Just last year, 225 remains were recovered here alone. But experts we spoke with say it's likely the death toll in the Sonora Desert is actually much higher. And that's because it's impossible to know exactly how many more people might have died here because the terrain is so vast and decomposition happens so quickly. To understand why and where the current humanitarian crisis started in Arizona, I went to meet with Reverend John Fife.
Reverend Fife.
John.
The thing is that, you know, I've been reporting about you for so long.
For decades, Reverend John Fife has been calling attention to deaths in the Sonoran Desert. I first interviewed Fife in the late 1980s. Fife's church, Southside Presbyterian in Tucson, was one of the first to offer sanctuary to migrants and asylum seekers.
We had been helping refugees cross the border and bringing them here to the church. We thought very secretively, until one of the government lawyers at a political asylum hearing talked to one of our lawyers and said, "We know what those guys are up to. Tell them to stop it or we'll indict them."
Reverend Fife and his partners suddenly found themselves embroiled in a federal investigation, facing prosecution, real prison time, for felony crimes, including human smuggling. But Fife doubled down on speaking publicly about what was happening in the desert.
We built the sanctuary on the legal thesis that we had not only a legal responsibility, but an ethical and faith responsibility to protect refugees. And it was the government that was the criminal here. And you can read it in their planning documents for their border enforcement strategy in the early 90s, particularly 1993-94.
Fife is referring to a document known as the Border Patrol Strategic Plan of 1994 and beyond. This was the birth of the Border Patrol policies known as prevention through deterrence. To make it really simple, early in his first term, President Bill Clinton faced bipartisan pressure to, quote, do something about the border.
I signed a presidential directive to the heads of all executive departments, instructing them to very quickly expand and strengthen our program to reduce illegal immigration in four key areas.
He supported this policy of prevention through deterrence, which basically said, as Fife put it,
we are actually planning that more people will die and using all those deaths and suffering in the desert as a deterrent to other people trying to cross.
They did it by focusing resources and strengthening Border Patrol presence along most of the border, setting up roadblocks and making it much harder to cross elsewhere. This funneled people to the most geographically dangerous areas, like the Sonora Desert. And that's how the number of deaths here, just south of Tucson, almost immediately climbed from just a handful to more than 100 per year. Though it began while a Democrat was president, it remains a bipartisan effort.
We have a responsibility to enforce our laws. We have a responsibility to secure our borders.
When I took office, I committed to fixing this broken immigration system. And I began by doing what I could to secure our borders.
They're bringing drugs. They're bringing crime. They're rapists. And some, I assume, are good people.
3 decades later, the deaths and disappearances seem to be seen as just a nuisance, a necessary side effect, one the U.S. government seems willing to accept under the guise of finding a so-called cure to the issue of unauthorized migration. For what it's worth, over the last decade, Border Patrol has in many ways tried to rebrand itself as a search and rescue organization, highlighting their, quote, life-saving work in their recruitment ads and their news reports.
The sanctity of human life is paramount, and we always place that above all other priorities in our day-to-day duties and jobs that we do. I think it's important for the American people to know that the men and women of U.S. Customs and Border Protection are the most humane law enforcement agency in the country.
At the same time, Border Patrol cites the number of deaths caused by their own deterrence to request budget increases from Congress each year. That's led to more money, more tools, more agents. Today, the Border Patrol's budget is nearly $5 billion. And yet, with all of that money, all of that technology, all of those agents, the Blue Armadillos still have to show up here twice a month. Coming up on Latino USA, we meet a woman whose mother went missing in the late 1990s when deterrent policies were just ramping up. And we learn more about the ways the agency takes credit for desert rescues, all while volunteer groups take on the brunt of the most dangerous jobs. Our report from Futuro Investigates continues. Stay with us. No te vayas.
Support for Latino USA comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting time and money with your current business software, or just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/latino. That's odoo.com/latino. Odoo, modern management made simple. Climate change affects everyone, but it doesn't affect everyone equally. Immigrants often bear a unique burden due to climate change, but they're also leading the way with impactful solutions. Feet in Two Worlds, the news outlet and journalism training organization for immigrant voices, presents Home Interrupted. From flooded basement apartments in New York City to indigenous Maya farming practices in Nebraska, Feet in Two Worlds, Home Interrupted brings you deeply reported original stories from across the United States. Episodes drop each week starting April 2nd. Find Feet in Two Worlds, Home Interrupted wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, we're back. Before the break, we reported about how the Border Patrol's own policies purposely funnel people hoping to cross into the United States through the deadliest terrain in the country. And we met the Blue Armadillos, a volunteer search and rescue group that's one of the only hopes for family members of the people who disappear on the border. We're back with the Blue Armadillos in the Sonora Desert. While en route to start the long trek to look for the Honduran man named Johnny, the Blue Armadillo's car suddenly screeches to a halt. A young man has popped out from some shrubs on the side of the road. He's waving his arms, and he looks incredibly weak.
shit.
Hola, bueno.
Hola.
Bienvenidos. ¿Usted necesita médico?
¿Dónde?
Sí. Ask him if he knows where he is.
¿Sabe dónde estás?
No.
The man can barely walk. He plops down on the floor by the car, and then he closes his eyes.
De Sinaloa.
Sinaloa.
Hola. ¿Cuánto tiempo tiene ya caminando?
4 días.
4 días.
¿Viene lastimado?
We're not sharing his name for his own protection, but he says he's tired and hurt. He's from Sinaloa, Mexico, and has been wandering in the desert for 4 days without water. The blue armadillos spring into action. They give him clean water, a sandwich, and medication. After he's rested, they ask if he wants to continue walking. The armadillos won't stop him, but their ability to help is severely limited. The blue armadillos tell our producers they've been warned by Border Patrol that they can be charged with smuggling for transporting a person. The only option they have is to let the man continue on his way or to call Border Patrol if he's too injured to walk. The problem is, he will be detained if Border Patrol shows up.
¿Estás seguro que quieres que venga migración por ti?
Pues yo digo que sí, porque ¿para dónde voy a agarrar?
The young man says he can't keep walking. He says he's ready to go home. We wait until an agent shows up and takes him into custody. And Johnny, the Honduran man they were searching for, after 2 days and a night in the desert, our producers and the armadillos return empty-handed. He's still yet to be found. Before the blue armadillos and other rescue groups like them emerged in the last decade or so, if someone disappeared crossing the desert, distraught family members had absolutely no one to turn to. Their only option was to just wait. Elena Gonzalez was one of them. In 1997, her mom, Maria Ofelia Muñoz Valenzuela, packed her bags and left their small town of Ignacio de la Llave in Veracruz, Mexico. She was headed north.
Era una persona que muy querida ya, muy conocida, le decían la güera musiquera, porque era muy alegre, muy de bailes.
Elena says her mom was beloved around town. She was super hardworking, friendly, and oh, so passionate about music. As happy as she seemed on the outside, things at home were turbulent. Elena's dad was an addict and violent. Elena's mom was the only one that worked, and they were always in a precarious financial position.
Mi mamá siempre fue la que luchó. Mi mamá siempre fue la que llevó la comida a mi casa.
As in a lot of places in Latin America, in Veracruz, a quinceañera, or a 15th birthday celebration, is an important rite of passage for a young woman. But a few months before Elena's quinceañera, her dad said they had no money and she wouldn't be getting a celebration.
Ella me dijo a mí, no te preocupes, dice, yo te voy a hacer tu fiesta, dice, te voy a hacer una fiesta como nunca la has visto en el pueblo. Y yo me voy a encargar de eso. Ella dijo que se quería venir para Estados Unidos.
Elena says her mom told her not to worry, that she would make sure that Elena would have a party like no one in the town had ever seen. Then her mom said she was heading to the U.S. to work and send money home.
Pero en el fondo, allá en el fondo de mi corazón, yo siento que ella también lo hizo más porque estaba cansada del maltrato y no encontraba la forma de correr.
Elena says she knows deep down that the quinceañera was just an excuse to leave. Her mom was desperate to escape her husband's abuse.
At first, Elena's mom tried to cross through a known path in Texas, but she and her group that she was traveling with were detained by Border Patrol. Elena's mom called from the detention center. She said she was going to try again. So, Elena waited and waited and waited for her mom's next phone call.
Tuvo que haber pasado algo por el cual no mi mamá, por la razón de que mi mamá no viene, no aparece.
As months passed, Elena became more and more desperate. She didn't know who to call or how to ask for someone to look for her mom.
¿Cómo una persona se puede desaparecer así del mundo?
Elena wondered, how could her mother disappear just like that?
Ahí era que mis esperanzas iban cayendo poco a poco.
She began to lose hope that she'd ever know what happened to her mother. During the time that Elena's mom left Mexico in the late 1990s until today, deaths on the border continue to increase. So has Border Patrol's funding. Their current annual budget is about $5 billion. For years, Border Patrol has touted the work of a special unit created more than three decades ago inside the Border Patrol. It's called the Border Patrol Search, Trauma, and Rescue Unit, or BORSTAR. And it's supposed to be dedicated to saving lives. But through a public records request we obtained, we learned that BORSTAR's budget for fiscal year 2020 was a bit more than $2.2 million. That's just a tiny fraction of the multi-billion dollar budget set aside for enforcing the same policies that are leading people to disappear and die in the desert. An Inspector General report in 2016 found that the effectiveness and cost of groups such as BORSTAR are actually unknown. Many people we spoke to in Arizona say these deaths do not need to happen in the first place, including someone who used to work inside the Border Patrol. In a dusty lot behind a cemetery with large gravestones and shady trees, I meet former Border Patrol agent Francisco Cantú. We're standing at a pauper's grave in Tucson, a burial site for those who couldn't afford a plot.
You know, you wouldn't even know that there was anything over here.
Cantú said he wanted to meet here because it's where unidentified migrants used to be laid to rest. It's a place that makes him question a lot of years of his life. Cantú worked for Border Patrol from 2008 to 2012, including in the Tucson sector. He later published a memoir about his time as an agent. He says he will never forget the first time he saw a dead person in the desert.
I remember thinking like, oh, like today's the day. Like it took a while. Like it took me longer than a lot of other people to see that first dead body in the desert. And there's stories that people tell about, you know, when you find your first dead body, like bring a canister of Vicks VapoRub with you, Vaporub, and you put it under your nose so that so that the smell doesn't get stuck in your nose.
While he was an agent, Cantú says the notion of encountering a dead person, it was just part of the job.
Agents are always telling stories about this to normalize the fact that you're going to find a dead body while you're walking through a desert.
Cantú says he now realizes this normalization of death was just part of the indoctrination that happens inside Border Patrol.
From the moment that you show up at the Border Patrol Academy, the whole time the rhetoric is of danger, of, you know, the people who are crossing the border presenting a threat, and that the people who are crossing the border are criminal. Whereas the vast majority of these people are refugees, right? They're in a humanitarian crisis. They're seeking safety.
Cantú says the indoctrination in the agency is almost necessary to do this type of work. And it's not lost on him that half of the Border Patrol are Latinos and Latinas.
All of that serves to dehumanize the people who are coming across the border. And the fact that the only reason people are making this dangerous crossing, the only reason that people are out in the middle of the desert where they need to be rescued, you know, is because of the enforcement practices and because of the policies, right? Like prevention through deterrence, we can push people out. If we lock down this area, people will cross over there. I mean, I think we should be haunted by these people.
Those who die in the desert and who are found end up at the Pima County Medical Examiner's Office in Tucson. Since the year 2000, this office has processed more than 3,600 remains of people believed to have died crossing the border into the United States. Because hundreds of new remains are recovered every year, and because most of them remain unidentified, the medical examiner's office has run out of space.
You just gotta let people have their thing. You know? So.
Dr. Gregory Hess is the medical examiner. Right now, he tells me, most of the remains they find are stored in cardboard boxes inside an 18-wheeler truck that's parked right behind the building we're in right now.
If it's close to a full set of skeletal remains, it's basically one person in a box. If they're fragmented or partial skeletal remains, we can put multiple sets of remains in a box.
The problem is that most of the remains are never claimed. And that's because it can be really difficult to recover DNA from skeletal remains, and even harder to match them to family outside of the United States.
So this is a humerus, or the bone from an upper arm. This end of the bone has been kind of chewed off by animal activity. So what are the odds of us identifying this person in a timely manner? Again, not very good.
The Arizona desert has become a de facto bone yard for the United States. Just days or even hours after a person dies, their bones can be scattered miles and miles apart by birds of prey or other animals. It often takes years for remains to be discovered. By the time they're found, bones are often completely bleached after so many years under the desert sun.
This is going to be more complete. So these remains were recovered in 2020.
Goodness.
And so...
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so here we have quite a bit more. So here's some hair that was found with the remains. Here's... We don't keep a ton of property, but sometimes we'll keep some distinctive property items with the remains.
Oh, my gosh. This is an Estee Lauder makeup pack.
Mm-hmm.
This person has also not been identified. Their bones and their belongings are returned to a box inside the trailer in hopes that one day someone will come and claim them. S has been doing this job for more than a decade. He says being a medical examiner here in Tucson is different from anywhere else in the country.
This isn't really something that you can really take home. So... No, I don't spend a lot of time ruminating about it. If you did, then you probably wouldn't last too long.
In 2005, nearly 10 years after her mom's disappearance, Elena couldn't take the waiting and the guilt anymore. She decided she would cross the border herself and look for her mom in the north.
Si yo tengo la culpa, yo la tengo que buscar. Porque mi mamá no creo que haya sido tan mala persona y se haya ido así de la nada, olvidándose de su hija y de su madre.
By then, deterrence policies had been in place for more than a decade, and border deaths had already doubled. Elena was one of the lucky ones. She was able to successfully cross into Texas through the border city of Reynosa, Mexico. With a guide, she made it through the Rio Grande. Eventually, she settled down in New York, then in New Jersey, where she lives today, and she kept on searching online for her mom.
Yo siempre buscaba en las redes cómo buscar un familiar, cómo encontrar una persona desaparecida, y de repente me salió esta la organización de Colibrí.
One day, she read about the Colibrí Center for Human Rights. The nonprofit, based in Tucson, Arizona, uses DNA to try and match families who have missing loved ones with unidentified remains like the ones we saw at the Pima County Medical Examiner's Office. In 2016, staff from Colibrí came to New York, where Elena was living at the time, in order to take Elena's DNA. About 2 years passed without any news. Colibrí is a really small team. The process of IDing remains is labor-intensive and expensive. But eventually, one day, Elena got a call from Colibrí while she was on her way home from work.
Cuando dijo la palabra lamentablemente, yo sentía como que todo se me venía encima. Me dice un cráneo que fue encontrado en Webb Country, Texas, fue compatible con su ADN. Y era la señora María Ofelia Muñoz Valenzuela.
Elena was told that the DNA she had submitted matched with a skull that ended up in Webb County, Texas. More than 20 years after her mother, Maria, left Veracruz for the United States, Elena finally found out that her mom had died while crossing into the United States.
Se me fue la voz. Ya no pude hablar más nada. Y fue el momento en que yo dije, wow. Se destruyó toda esa esperanza en ese ratito. Pero asimismo, sentí que mi corazón descansó. Porque me di cuenta que mi mamá no me había abandonado como lo pensaba.
The news destroyed any hope she had in finding her mom alive. But she says she was finally able to rest, knowing that her mother hadn't abandoned her. The worst part, she says, was all these years of just not knowing. Coming up on Latino USA, I continue my decades-long quest to find out why the thousands of deaths at the border have been normalized. And I try to get an answer as to who's responsible for these needless deaths that continue to happen. Stay with us. No te vayas. We're back. Before the break, Elena finally learned the truth about her mother's death, and she was reunited with her mom's remains more than two decades after her mom attempted to cross the border into the United States. And finally, we continue trying to seek answers from those in power.
There we go. go.
And right now we have just pulled into a very humble, humble little building. It's very small. There's just dirt all around it, cinder block and a chain link fence. We are at La Casa de la Esperanza. It's the House of Hope. This is a shelter in Sasabe, Mexico. This is just a couple of steps away from a tiny U.S. border crossing station. Dora Rodriguez helped to open this shelter just last year. It's about an hour and a half drive south from Tucson. That's where Dora has lived since she arrived in the U.S.
Welcome to Casa Esperanza. Welcome to our beautiful place. Thank you. This is a sanctuary, literally sanctuary for our people.
The work is really personal for Dora. That's because in 1980, when she was a teenager, Dora almost died crossing the Sonora Desert. She was fleeing from the Civil War in El Salvador. There were 26 people in her group, and half of them died. Now she travels to Mexico on the weekends to help cook meals and to run this shelter.
Breakfast. I think it's our universal breakfast. Pinto beans, scrambled eggs, queso fresco, y aguacate.
Dora says they opened the shelter after Border Patrol started dumping people here, a small town with no resources. But she says their work is just a band-aid for a much bigger problem. The intricate web of even newer policies that, coupled with prevention through deterrence, have only increased the risks for people crossing the border.
Everybody wants to take advantage of these people. Everyone want to get their money, destroy them somehow, and then they get to our borders, and we receive them with the same punishment. We receive them with hatred. We receive them with this very sharp, strong policies that you cannot be here asking for asylum, or I cannot listen to your story.
Dora says not a day goes by that someone doesn't wander through their doors injured, exhausted, or looking for some kind of help. In just 8 hours, we watched nearly a dozen people come to this shelter. Many of them could barely walk. They came in limping with injured and blistered feet from the desert after being dropped off by the Border Patrol. Chasing and separating people from the groups that they're traveling with is a Border Patrol tactic sometimes called dispersion or scattering. Border Patrol might pursue people, forcing them into rivers, over cliffs, or even deeper into the desert. Sometimes this happens by air. One young man we spoke to, whose name we're withholding to protect his identity, said he was separated from his group in the Sonora Desert after a Border Patrol helicopter swooped down over them. After losing his group, he says he wandered alone for days without water, food, or any idea where he was going. Eventually, he was found by Border Patrol and dropped off here. Okay, he's wincing a lot. He's got blisters on every single toe. At the shelter, a volunteer nurse punctures and disinfects the large blisters that cover the base of his feet. She does the same for several others here. All tell similar stories of days wandering aimlessly in the desert, fearing they would die alone. I wondered how many preventable deaths could actually be avoided if the Border Patrol put humanity over policy. Where are we? What is this?
So we are at the Brown Canyon Rescue Beacons.
When we told Border Patrol that we were working on a story about deaths in the desert, they told us they wanted to show us a rescue beacon.
So this rescue beacon, and the reason why this is here is to help anybody that's in distress, they can ask for help. So you push that red button, it'll send a signal to our office, and then we can send somebody to help that person and rescue them.
That's Border Patrol agent Jesus Vasavilbaso. He is really proud to show us this nearly 30-foot long white pole in the middle of the desert. On top of this very thin pole, there's a strobe light. Border Patrol touts these beacons as an integral part and proof of the agency's goal to protect migrant lives. They say that lost migrants will see these beacons from a distance and use them to call for help. At the beacon, I notice that there are no Border Patrol logos anywhere, just a sign in English and in Spanish that directs a person to press a button. And well, that's it. Border Patrol says the beacons don't say Border Patrol so as not to dissuade people who need help from getting it. But also,
it's not like there's water here. You know what I'm saying? It's not like you come here and you're going to be saved.
Well, you are, because, you know, when you push that button, somebody's going to show up. Border Patrol is going to show up. We have water with us.
It's not surprising to me that there is no water or even first aid supplies anywhere near the beacons. While activist groups like No More Deaths and Humane Borders have set up permanent water stations in the desert and go out weekly to refill containers, there have been numerous documented reports of Border Patrol agents actually going into the desert to empty those water containers. Agent Vasavilbaso insists the beacons are not an enforcement tool, but he doesn't argue that they do detain migrants who call for help after rendering aid. According to public records, there have been about 160 rescue beacons put up on the U.S.-Mexico border. Whether they actually save lives has been much more difficult to gauge. Reports provided to us by Border Patrol show thousands of beacon activations every year. So we asked the Border Patrol to clarify, do activations mean the button was pressed by a person, or do they include motion sensor cameras equipped on the beacons, which can easily be set off by the many wild animals that live in this region? They did not give us an answer. The documents that we also searched failed to mention how long the response time is after an activation. And yet, this year, Border Patrol requested and received another $2 million from Congress to purchase more beacons. Agent Vasavilbaso insists the solution to desert deaths is even more funding.
So if the Border Patrol had more money and more agents in the Tucson sector, do you think that would lead to preventing more deaths?
Absolutely. I can guarantee you that if we make 100% apprehensions of 100% of the people that cross, nobody would die.
In 2022, Congress approved a record-breaking nearly $6.2 billion for an annual budget for Border Patrol. That's a 26% increase from 2021. If money can save lives, I wonder how, with the largest law enforcement budget in the nation, Border Patrol can still take zero responsibilities for the deaths in this desert. Over the last year, we tried to answer that question. We filed open records requests with Border Patrol, traveled to the border on numerous occasions, and requested sit-down interviews with officials, including the Chief Commissioner of the Border Patrol, the Department of Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas, and President Joe Biden. The White House press office acknowledged our request. They knew what our story was about, and we communicated a number of times about it via phone and email. After a few weeks of being told to keep waiting for a response, we reached our deadline. We could talk to the press secretary, but that would be it. I called producer Julieta Martinelli to break the news.
Hello,
Julieta?
Hey, Maria.
The more I thought about it, the more bothered I felt by the fact that I'd only be allowed to ask my questions to White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre.
The daughter of Haitian Americans? She and I are going to be in conversation about this? Like, that's what we're reduced to?
I mean, there's no point in going if we're not going to be able to speak to the president.
What we are trying to do is get answers and clarity. And I think that it is a legitimate question to ask. Who holds the Border Patrol and the United States government writ large? Who holds them accountable?
We decided to publish our piece anyway. The reality is that there is not enough transparency when it comes to Border Patrol funding. Even when it continues to grow at astronomical rates, funded, of course, by our tax dollars. Numerous mentions of funding for rescue efforts are cited in the latest budget report. And yet, after following the work of volunteer groups for months, our investigative team tried to understand how many of the rescues credited to the Border Patrol were actually done by outsiders. There's no public data that breaks down those numbers. There is no mention that a handful of volunteer groups like the Blue Armadillos are helping to do the dangerous work of looking for people in the desert. Before publishing this piece, Border Patrol admitted over email that search and rescue groups are required to call them when they rescue a lost person in the desert. They also admitted that they record those rescues in their reports as successful rescues performed by Border Patrol. Back in New Jersey, Elena, the young woman who came to the U.S. in search of her missing mom, tells us she has spent years in therapy, but since her mother's remains were identified, now, she says, she is finally starting to heal.
Yo viví todos esos años con una herida abierta y era la que me alimentaba todo lo que eran mis ansiedades, mis depresiones, mis ataques de pánico. Y una vez que yo pues pude saber de ella, pues esa herida se sanó y mi corazón como que descansó.
Elena says she's found an unexpected source of strength, a sense of usefulness now. She's been volunteering with Colibri, the same organization that helped her find her own mom's remains.
Quiero dar un poco de mí. Y yo siento que es una forma de apoyarlos a ellos.
And Elena says she's learned that she shares her mom's passion for music. On the weekends now, Elena sings in a banda with her husband. They perform at weddings and quinceañeras and parties all across New Jersey. Often before performing in a show, Elena says she'll sit down in her living room and speak with her mom. While the rest of Elena's mother's remains were never found, her skull was cremated and returned to Elena in a beautiful wooden urn. Her mother's name is embossed in black letters on a gold plaque.
Ya que en vida nunca pude, ahora sí que tener a mi madre como todo hijo tiene que tener a sus padres, que es en un altar, ¿no? Y pues ella para mí, aunque no esté físicamente, pero en mi corazón, para mí ella va a estar siempre primero.
Elena shows us a video of a recent performance. Her waist-long hair is curled and she's wearing a gorgeous set of boots. She says this is her favorite song to perform. Cuando muere una dama, when a lady dies. It's by Jenny Rivera. The lyrics go, I was a strong warrior that fought for her children. Remember that in life, your mother never backed down. Elena tears up a little at the next part. It says, I know that in the next life, we'll be together again. We'll laugh and enjoy all our triumphs. Elena says her mom would have loved it. Arizona, Death by Policy is an original production by Futuro Investigates. This episode was produced by senior producers Julieta Martinelli and Roxanne Scott. The episode was edited by Mitra Bonshahi with deal production by Jess Alvarenga. Our associate producers are Oscar De Leon, Roxana Aguirre, and Sofia Sanchez. Fact-checking by Ben Kalin. Myself and Penile Ramirez are the executive producers of Futuro Unidad Hinojosa, the Investigations and Special Projects Division of Futuro Media. Nancy Trujillo and Raul Perez are our project managers. Thanks to our partners at Border Hub and to Fernanda Santos, our editorial director. This episode was mixed by Stephanie LeBeau and Julia Caruso. This reporting was made possible with support from the W.K. Kellogg Foundation, the Chan Zuckerberg Initiative, and Hispanics in Philanthropy. Thank you to the Community Foundation of Southern Arizona for their early support of this work. To find more information about Arizona Death by Policy and read our article, please visit our website, futuroinvestigates.org. And remember, no te vayas. Chao.
Latino USA is made possible in part by W.K. Kellogg Foundation, a partner with communities, where children come first, the Chan Zuckerberg Initiative, and Hispanics in Philanthropy.